Gopijana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Gopijana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Sodanandana Prajajanaranjana Yasodanandana Prajajanaranjana Amunatsiravanachari Amunatsira Panachari Jaya Radha Madhava Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. A continuation of Mohini Murti bewilders Lord Shiva, Canto 8, Chapter 12, and the text on the board is text 41. We'll be reading after the chanting of text 41 through to text 46. So, beginning with text 41. Shishuko vacha evan bhagavata rajan shivatsan kena satkritaha amantra tam parikramya saga Naha svalayam yayo Shishuko vacha Evan Bhagavata Rajan. Shrivatsankena Satkritaha. Amantra Tam Parikramya. Saganaha Svalayam Yau Yau. Shishuko Vacha. Evan Bhagavata Rajan. Shivatsankena Satkritaha. Amantra Tam Parikramya. Saganaha Svalayam Yau Yau. Please chant. Jishuko Vacha. Evan Bhagavata Rajan. Shivatsankena Satkrita. Amantra Tam Parikramya. Sagana Svalayam Yayo. Shri Shuko Vacha. Evan Bhagavatam Rajan. Ena Satkrita. Amantra Tam Parikramya. Sagana Svalayam Yayo. Shri Shuko Vacha. Evan Bhagavata Rajan. Shivatsankena Satkritaha. Amantra Tam Parikramya. Sagana Svalayam Yayo. Shishuko Vacha. Evan Bhagavata Rajan. Shivatsankena Satkrita. Amantra Tam Parikramya. Sagana Svalayam Yayo. So there's the word for word for this particular verse. There's a purport too. Shri Sukaha Uvacha. Shri Sukadev Goswami said, Evam, thus, Bhagavata, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Rajan, O King, Shrivatso Ankena, who always carries the mark of Shrivatsa on his breast. Satkritaha, been very much applauded. Amantra, taking permission from. Tam, him. Parikramya, circumambulating. Saganaha, with his associates. Svaalayam, to his own abode. Yayao, went back. Translation. Sukadev Goswami said, O King, having thus been praised by the Supreme Personality of Godhead who bears the mark of Srivatsa on his chest, Lord Shiva circumambulated him. Then, after taking permission from him, Lord Shiva returned to his abode, Kailash, along with his associates. Purport. Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur remarks that when Lord Shiva was offering obeisances unto Lord Vishnu arose and embraced him. Therefore, the word Shrivatsankena is used here. The mark of Shrivatsa adorns the chest of Lord Vishnu, and therefore, when Lord Vishnu embraced Lord Shiva while being circumambulated, the Shrivatsa mark touched Lord Shiva's bosom. So I'll read through to text 42. Atmamsa bhutam tarmayam bhavanim bhagavan bhavaha sammatam rishi mukhayanam pritya chastata bharatam. Translation. O descendant of Bharatu Maharaj, Lord Shiva, in jubilation, then addressed his wife Bhavani, who is accepted by all authorities as the potency of Lord Vishnu. Text 43. Ayivyapasyastvam ajasya mayam parasya pumsa paradevatayaha aham kalanam rishabopi muhe yaya vasho nyekim utashvantraha. In the translation to text 43. Lord Shiva said, O goddess, you have now seen the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the unborn master of everyone. Although I am one of the principal expansions of his lordship, even I was illusioned by his energy. What then is to be said of others who are fully dependent on Maya? Text 44. Yamam aprichastvam upetya yogat sama sahasrant uparatam vai sa eva shakshar purushaha purano na yatra kalo vishate na vedaha. In the translation to text 44. When I finished performing mystic yoga for 1,000 years, you asked me upon whom I was meditating. Now here is that supreme person to whom time has no entrance and who the Vedas cannot understand. Purport. Eternal time enters anywhere and everywhere, but it cannot enter the kingdom of God. Nor can the Vedas understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is an indication of the Lord's being omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient. Text 45. Shishuko vacha iti ti bihitas tata vikramaha saranga danvanaha sindor nirmatane yena Dritaha Prishte Mahachalaha. In translation to text 45. Shukadev Goswami said, my dear king, the person who bore the great mountain on his back for the churning of the ocean of milk is the same Supreme Personality of Godhead known as Shangandanva. I have now described to you his prowess. And text 46. Etan muhu kritayato osruvato narishyate yatsu samudya mahakvachit yatsu tamashloka ganuvarpanam samasta samsara parishrampaham. And the translation to text 46. The endeavor of one who constantly hears or describes this narration of the churning of the ocean of milk will never be fruitless. Indeed, chanting the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only means to annihilate all sufferings in this material world. Omagyana timarandasya gananjana shalakaya Shakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shi gurve namaha. Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Ramapada Swami iti namine. Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami iti namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpit Rubyascha Kripa Sandubya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I'll read the translation to text 41 again, since we covered quite a few texts after that. Shukadev Goswami said, O King, having thus been praised by the Supreme Personality who bears the mark of Srivatsa on his chest, Lord Shiva circumambulated him. Then after taking permission from him, Lord Shiva returned to his abode Kailash along with his associates. While circumambulating the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva paid his obeisances, and in doing so, he was touched by the Srivatsa mark on the chest of Lord Vishnu at the moment when Lord Shiva arose and embraced him. So it's a very significant moment because one hears that after that, Lord Shiva returned to his abode, Kailash, along with his associates. And then everything that follows in the text that I've read today is the particular mood that he had following that embrace of Lord Vishnu. So just as an aside, we know that on the chest of Lord Vishnu is a particular lock of hair that's known as Srivatsa. And also there's the transcendental jewel, the Kostubha jewel. So it's after this exchange with Lord Vishnu that Lord Shiva is in a state of jubilation. And it's in that state of jubilation that he addresses his wife, Bhavani, and tells her that she has just seen the illusory energy of the Lord. And this is how he states it. Even I was illusioned by his energy. What then is to be said of others who are fully dependent on Maya? So I thought to examine a little bit Lord Shiva's looking at persons being fully dependent on Maya. So having a dependence upon or being controlled by Maya means that one cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this inability to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead or being illusioned, as Lord Shiva puts it here, means that one's holding certain concepts or certain beliefs that are not in accord with the facts. And Lord Shiva, referring to those who are controlled by Maya, is referring to a whole category of persons. And Lord Krishna puts it this way, I mean, it's a complete generalization that... He puts it this way, O conqueror of the foe, all living entities, note, are born into delusion, bewildered by the dualities arising from desire and hate. So that's Bhagavad Gita 7:28. So it's an entire category of living entities. Everyone, basically. They cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the... So instead of seeing him as appearing by his internal potency, they're actually seeing the Lord as having been created by material energies. So this is the biggest problem and why all persons are falling into this particular character category. So the view is, or this view that's been held, that the Lord is created by material energies, is due to ignorance of the position of the Lord. And I want to comment here, you know, this is a very common understanding, and even amongst religionists. So one will find Christians talking about heaven on earth. So the idea is that it's the Supreme Lord can actually be present in this particular realm because he's also made of material energies. It's a very delusional idea. So it means that there's some ignorance of the position of the Lord. The proper position is described by him himself, where he says, "The material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again." So I'll read the Sanskrit of that verse because it's very significant, the position of Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna. That's Bhagavad Gita 9:10. Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena konteya jagat vipari vartate. So the Lord is the supreme director, and it's his, by his supreme will, and that's what's behind this material manifestation. So it appears invisible, generally, his will, how it's operating, because he's entrusted the management to material nature. So one may miss that point, that his will is in the background. And there's a nice analogy that's made to help one understand this. If there's a fragrant flower, that flower, because it has a fragrance, it's been touched by the smelling power of a person, but actually there's the fragrance of the flower, the smelling power of the person, they're not connected, they sort of detach from each other. So in the same way, Lord Krishna is the supreme will, the person behind the whole material manifestation. One has seen the material manifestation, but the material manifestation and the Lord are separated from one another. And it's said that it's his glance that creates this world. And but he gives material nature the decree, you know, you function this way or don't function that way. So he's detached from material activities. Now, Lord Shiva, he's supposed to have some influence of Maya working upon him, as opposed to Lord Vishnu, who's completely free, completely detached, just in this position described by Krishna, describing in Bhagavad Gita, the supreme will behind the material nature. So Lord Vishnu is in that position, but Lord Shiva is supposed to be influenced by Maya. But in this particular section that we're reading, Lord Shiva himself is marveling at those who are completely controlled by Maya. And in his case, Lord Shiva's case, he's associating with Maya, but he's not affected by Maya. I mean, he can be, but he's not. And this is contrary to living entities who are completely swayed by Maya. Says Durga, who's working in cooperation with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in creating this cosmic manifestation. So material nature or Prakriti is Durga. She's also the wife of Lord Shiva. So he's in association with Maya, the illusory energy. But from this pastime, we learned something very interesting a little bit earlier on. Lord Vishnu told Lord Shiva that Maya, the material external energy, will no longer be able to captivate him. So this is the particular boon that Lord Shiva received after his rather wonderful response to the exchange with Mohini Murti, where he was actually so pleased with the control exercised over him by the internal potency of the Lord. So this is what Lord Vishnu told him: he will no longer be touched by the external material energy. And we read that Durga is accepted by all authorities as the potency of Lord Vishnu. So there's a particular influence that Goddess Durga has, and I came across this really fantastic statement, which I think captures something of how her influence is working. So I'm going to read this statement. It's from Srimad Bhagavatam in the 5th canto, the 14th chapter, and the 10th verse. The conditioned soul sometimes personally appreciates the futility of sense enjoyment in the material world, and he sometimes considers material enjoyment to be full of miseries. However, due to his strong bodily conception, his memory is destroyed, and again, he runs after material enjoyment, just as an animal runs after a mirage in the desert. And there's a constant existence of duality, and this constant existence of duality is an indication of the control of Goddess Durga. So persons are living in a state of, they're experiencing honor but also dishonor. They're experiencing misery and they're experiencing happiness. Or they're experiencing pleasure and they're experiencing pain. So that's an indication of her influence, because she's having both elements be present constantly. So naturally there's no peace. It's not consistent experience of pleasure. There's pain. So that lack of consistency is creating discomfort. And this is the influence of Goddess Durga. So her influence is there because of the fact that persons are holding these erroneous beliefs, which are contrary to the facts. That's why Lord Shiva's statement that they're in illusion. And those beliefs have to do with claiming ownership, which is contrary to Lord Krishna's statement in Bhagavad Gita, where he actually says that the material nature is one of my energies and it's working under my direction. So the concept of ownership, or seeing that things are under the control of oneself in the material world, is clearly an erroneous belief. So I wanted to just mention an aside. I came across this in looking at some of the teachings from my spiritual master, and he mentions that Durga is in fact a partial expansion of Yoga Maya. Yoga Maya is in fact the one potency or spiritual strength of the Lord, but the expansion of Durga is particularly for the purpose of creating this bewilderment, this discomfort, for conditioned souls who holding that belief that, you know, the world is theirs and they're in charge of it. So Lord Shiva then makes a statement about the Supreme Person through these texts we were reading. So he's talking to his wife, and here he says, now here is that supreme person to whom time has no entrance and who the Vedas cannot understand. So this particular statement of Lord Shiva's is explained by Srila Prabhupada, where the reason time has no entrance refers to time in the spiritual world has no entrance. Rather, time can enter anywhere and everywhere in the material creation. Like there's a beginning point, there's an end point. But in the spiritual world, there's that continuity. So you can again see that discomfort of the material world. Not only that constant or inability to have a constant experience. There's always, everything's controlled by time. There's a beginning point and an end point. So, and the entrance of time can't be checked in any way. So, in material world, this entrance of time is usually indicated, or there's a warning, because bodies come to a point of becoming old and useless. So, and then it's after that that one can expect that death is arriving. And death is served by cruel time. No checking of that. So because of the fact that there's no remedial measure for this arrival of death, death is considered to be identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead because it's his spiritual touch. it's almost like ending that entire illusion consciousness of ownership or quest for constancy of experience. Krishna's touch in the form of death brings that to an end. And you find Krishna also telling Arjuna the same thing, because at the moment when Arjuna's not wanting to fight, Krishna's actually telling him that death can't be checked. Even if Arjuna doesn't fight, still all those, it's already destined. All the persons on the battlefield are going to have to die. So hypothetically, even if he weren't to fight, it's still destined that death will take or bring to an end the lives of those particular persons present. And he puts it himself this way, time I am the great destroyer of the worlds, and I've come here to destroy all people. This is in the Universal Form chapter, Krishna in his Universal Form. So with the conception, with the exception of you, the Pandavas, all the soldiers here on both sides will be slain. So it's by Krishna's will again. He's behind the material creation. And it's nature's law that time will destroy the material manifestation. Time will destroy the entities, all those delusioned entities. Then Lord Shiva mentions in part of this section where he's talking to Bhavani, he says he's been meditating for 1,000 years upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he reveals the nature of his meditation. this is in a different section of the Bhagavatam, but it's particularly pertinent because he explains what he's meditating and how he's meditating. He says, I'm always engaged in offering obeisances to Lord Vasudev in pure Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is always pure consciousness in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Vasudev, is revealed without any covering. So, I mean, the start of this particular section of verse and this verse on the board had Lord Shiva paying his obeisances, literally, to Lord Vishnu. But in fact, mentally, he's always offering obeisances to Lord Vasudev. This is what his meditation is. internally, he's constantly offering obeisances to Lord Vasudev. And the explanation given by Srila Prabhupada on this is that Shiva is existing in a state which is under the direct control of the internal potency, the Sudasattva state. It means that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is revealed without any covering, and all material consciousness has stopped. So no longer is there any experience of all those dualities. All the thinking, feeling, willing, all the activities of the mind have become completely halted. Which is a very peaceful state, taking into account the general discomfort caused by all the dualities, or the inability to experience one constant state. Although I don't know anybody would be wanting to experience a constant state of misery, but at least the positive end, the constant state of pleasure or the constant state of happiness. So the state that Lord Shiva is in his meditation, where he's describing his 1,000 years of meditation, is that he's seen the Lord everywhere and all-pervading, and at the same time he's seen him present within the heart. Because he doesn't have material nature acting upon him in any way. And this particular state is attainable by persons in the material world too. It's that state in which the mirror of the mind has been cleansed. And there's a clear concept of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you can sort of understand why Lord Shiva found it quite easy to ask the Supreme Personality of Godhead, show me your Mohini Murti form. He's got a completely clear concept of who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. So it's like asking somebody something very straightforward. He's asking him to show a particular form that he manifested, which is such an unusual request if you really think of it from a material perspective. Generally, one who knows somebody really well or has a good understanding of somebody will make a request that's you know, more simple, like, can you show me your new outfit or something of that nature, but show me your form. So one can see that Durga isn't exercising her bewildering potency on Lord Shiva. And Krishna explains this too. He says, he who meditates on me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O son of Pritha, is sure to reach me. And we find that this very much paints the picture of Lord Shiva's meditation, constantly engaged in remembering Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu. So this is that revival of memory that happens for a person who's under the control of Maya, or or that revival of memory that is lost when a person is under the control of Maya. So one can come to understand the Lord as the supreme enjoyer, separate from holding that erroneous belief of being the controller of material nature or the enjoyer of material nature. And this is done by mystic meditation, this hearing and chanting of the sound vibration of the Supreme Lord. So by force, one is engaging the mind to think of the Supreme Lord. So that's the those persons that Lord Shiva is marveling as being completely under the control of Maya. This is the antidote, forcing the mind to think of the Supreme Lord. So these were some thoughts. I try to make a little contribution on this section if there's anything to expand the discussion.
I'm wondering if you can explain a little bit more about the duality of the material world, and then also about the non-duality of the spiritual world. Like, I guess it's easy to see non-duality in like void, but like, how is there non-duality in the spiritual world?
Okay. So I guess it's contrasting the two worlds. So in the material world, the duality, due to the control of time, there's always a beginning point and an end point for any experience. So in interacting with the material world or the material energy, persons are approaching it with certain desires. So those desires are generally to get some enjoyment from the interaction with the material energy. So the interaction will be such that what is done has the goal of giving pleasure or happiness, and what transpires is the activity that's performed to give pleasure or happiness has a short duration, and so the happiness is fleeting or the pleasure is fleeting. It's for the time of engagement in the activity, or perhaps even the contemplation subsequent to that on the activity, but in actual fact it's constrained by the existence of time. It cannot continue the pleasurable part, the happiness part. It's curtailed, and in fact this is the particular arrangement of Goddess Durga, that the illusion is maintained by her because persons continue to believe it will still be possible to obtain pleasure, it will still be possible to obtain happiness through engagement in some activities or some interactions with material energy, but always there's the cutoff point. And often the what's discovered, even through the engagement of those activities, there's the exact opposite, and this is the duality. The same thing that appeared to give pleasure, which wasn't anything but fleeting, can actually become a source of distress. So, for instance, pleasurable activities may be in the form of eating, or it may be in the form of interactions with persons, but always the interaction cannot be done constantly. And also, let's say a simple example of the eating thing, there's only a certain capacity that one is able to enjoy something that's imbibed. So one has a favorite liquid that one likes, and so there's pleasure in imbibing the liquid, but because it's in one body that's material and the capacity of the stomach is so much, only so much can be taken in. And then if one attempts to go beyond the limit, then there's some suffering, you know, a very bloated stomach, or some sort of pain, physical pain from having tried to exceed the limit, because everything is constrained and controlled. And then in the spiritual world, there's the absence of time. So it means that there's not the constraint of a limited amount of pleasure or happiness that one can experience. So one performs an activity. So in the spiritual world, because the concepts that are being held are not concepts of personal enjoyment, but rather enjoyment in relation to Krishna, and because he is Satchidananda, so eternally blissful, knowledgeable, eternally existent, just that connection and time not being present means that the activity that's performed, say the eating activity, if we were to take the same example, it can be continuous. One can actually eat a great deal, and it's not constrained by a body that has limits. The body is blissful, knowledgeable, able to continuously experience the pleasure. So that's due to the absence of time. What else to say? Also, yes, the one's in a state of pure knowledge or complete knowledge. So part of the distress in the material world is that there's a separation from pure knowledge, and pure knowledge is knowledge of Krishna. So any separation for knowledge related to Krishna is creating part of that distress that Durga makes sure remains there, with the lack of understanding or being separated from that knowledge. But in the spiritual world, the knowledge is complete. So the consciousness is, what would be the word? Fully subservient to Krishna. And just by that full subservience to Krishna, there's full happiness, full pleasure, no time constraints, and all the activities that bring pleasure are in relation to Krishna, and therefore there's complete bliss and complete happiness. Everything's complete. There's not a constraint. And also the antithesis to it doesn't exist there. I've tried to explain it somehow. Jitendra, for it.
Brings to mind this phrase that you find in Prabhupada's book, that material happiness does not go uninterrupted. And then he also says that people are suffering from a poor fund of knowledge and insufficient brain substance. Another way of calling people stupid. Hare Krishna.
Oh, that. Oh, thank you. It ties in very well. Thank you very much, Ajendra Prabhu, for those particular statements. Thank you. Yes, I also missed the last few words.
Since Lord Shiva is constantly in all his activities and everything he does, he's constantly in pure Krishna consciousness. So what does he mean when he says, I meditated on the Lord for 1,000 years? Seems like an understatement.
So the question is, what does it mean when Lord Shiva says he meditated for 1,000 years? The question is, it implies an understatement if he's in pure Krishna consciousness. So in, I take it from your question that you're implying that there appears to be a time constraint. So you're wondering about that. I have to think a little.
Mm.
Lord Shiva is supposed to be not a Vishnu tattva and not a Jiva tattva. So he's somewhere in between. So it means that he understands the concept of time. So he's not in that. So he understands the position of those that are influenced by material nature very well, and he understands the transcendental position of being beyond the concept of time. And in this particular case, he's talking to his wife, he's addressing her, and for some reason, the mention of 1,000 years, somehow it seems to me that Lord Shiva is always very aware of the connection with the material energy and the connection with the jivas. So his connection is such that he has to have a perfect understanding of how the material nature is working, because he has a duty to perform. So when he's talking to Bhavani, or Goddess Durga, he's bringing in the concept of time, I think very much connected to his understanding of the fact that the material creation has the beginning point and the end point, just as everything in this world, beginning point and end point, it's constrained by time. So I would hypothesize, if I may, that the mention of time is based very much on the understanding of what the position is of entities under the control of material nature, because that's a lot of the subject matter that he looks at. He looks at how does material nature function and how does it actually act on the jiva existing within the material realm. So I think it's when one's in a certain consciousness and one's meditating on a particular topic, one brings up the concepts in relation to that topic. So I would take it that the mention of time is in relation to the topic that he's dealing with. That's how I would understand it.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. My question is kind of related to the same verse Jainis Haigor was mentioning. But one thing I observed that's kind of funny for us, it says Lord Shiva was meditating for 1,000 years. He told his wife, if you want to know who I was meditating on, it's on that form. Now, from our perspective, if we were in the same position as Lord Shiva, naturally, if we meditated on the Lord, the tendency is that if we came across a Mohini form, then that's the form we'll be meditating on from now on. And because we hear that verse in the Gita, it says, I think it's in chapter 2, it says, one should withdraw the senses from the sense objects as the tortoise withdraws its limbs within the shell. So then when you withdraw your senses within you, you could just meditate on all the other sense gratification you meditated on previously, you know, rewind, play. So my question, there seems to be like a dilemma with, I'm sure everyone goes through this dilemma. There's actually a story related to this in the Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. I don't remember where. I think I bookmarked it, but I usually like to reference this, but I don't remember. But basically, two of Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples went up to him, and they told Bhaktisiddhanta, Maharaj, we sincerely, even though we've been chatting and doing devotional service for many years, we really believe we haven't made any advancement at all. So then Bhaktisiddhanta kind of thought about it for a moment. Then he quoted one verse from the last chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita. I think it's somewhere verse 20-something. I don't remember. But basically he quoted the verse and he said, Primeta swabhav yaham primeta sambandha se mani krishna moda nahi prima ganda, that those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness are nahi prima ganda. They think they have not one drop of love for Krishna. So my question is that this is kind of the dilemma for devotees, is that those who are fallen aren't making any advancement in Krishna consciousness. And we hear this, that those who are advanced believe they're not making an advancement in Krishna consciousness. So my question is, how do we determine whether we're making advancement in Krishna consciousness? If that's the criteria, the same for fallen and advanced devotees, is like, you want to know whether you're committing aparad, why I'm not getting this taste. Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples never said it, but maybe they were meditating on Mohini forms. I don't know whether or not, but so my question is, although we're not looking for results, but still we want to have some criteria whether we're making aparads, and that's why we have no taste. So can you expand on those points?
So your question, as I understood it, is generally it would appear that there's difficulty in determining if one's making advancement in Krishna consciousness, and what are the criteria by which one can evaluate if one is making advancement in Krishna consciousness. And on the other hand, you were considering that persons who are very advanced, and you're drawing from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, they in fact don't see themselves as making advancement. So what are the criteria for making advancement? And somewhere thrown in that was some comment on the form of the Supreme Lord that one may be meditating on. So the criteria for knowing that whether one's making advancement. Well, the main criterion, since the means for making advancement is meditation on the Supreme Lord, and particularly the meditation on the sound vibration of the Supreme Lord, then the criterion for advancement is the amount of taste one is developing for the means for making advancement. And the means for making advancement does involve meditating on the Supreme Lord. And there is, I mean, one can meditate on different forms of the Supreme Lord. I haven't seen Mahini Murti in the list. I mean, the list is given, you know, one can meditate on Lord Ram, and the various, I mean, Lord Krishna, according to particular features that are prominent. So part of the means is meditating on the Supreme Lord and having a form of the Supreme Lord that one meditates on. So the main criterion is having a form of the Supreme Lord that one meditates on. So the extent to which one has a taste for the sound vibration of the Supreme Lord, and the extent to which one has a taste for seeing the form, worshipping the form of the Lord, would be criteria that could be used to at least understand for oneself how much advancement one's making. If the taste seems to be diminishing, that's generally a sign that the devotees of the Lord that are employing the same means have somehow been offended by one. That's what takes the taste away or diminishes the taste. So, yes. adherence to meditating on the form of the Lord and adherence to the process of the sound vibration of his name are the means for gaining the taste, and within it is the danger of the taste diminishing because of somehow offending somebody who's also following that process. It's a delicate matter, so one would want to be cautious, and if one notices that taste is diminishing, then carefully examining where it is one may have committed some offense. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.